over to Lindblom High School from where I graduated in the summer of 1944.
So it's the summer of 1944. Your oldest brother's already been in the Army.
Both of them.
Nick is, and then, so you get out of high school in June, then what happens?
I went into the Army. I graduated from high school. I think it was the 30th of June at the time. And the 15th, in August, I was drafted into the Army, into the service.
And when did you get shipped overseas?
I got shipped over in December of 19. I went to basic training immediately, and they then shipped me home. They allowed me to come home for approximately 10 days. And when I went back, I was shipped almost immediately overseas in December of 44.
When in December? Early? Late?
No, mid-September. Mid-December.
Then what happened?
It was towards the latter part of December, because I remember that really when I arrived, I had to arrive. The bulge was almost over. It was being terminated. So that was in the 25th or 26th of December. So I arrived there the latter part of December. I was in the infantry. And we went to replacement depot where we were subsequently shipped up to a unit. I lasted about 8 to 10 days, and I was struck by a piece of shrapnel, but very slightly. It cut me, but they had nothing to make any fuss over. But they wanted me to go to the hospital to check it. Went to the hospital, and they found I had pneumonia. I stayed in the hospital 10 days or so with pneumonia. Then my luck changed for the better. I was shipped to another replacement depot and never went back to the infantry again. I was finally rotated back to the United States Army Air Corps, where I was in a supply depot, six PIDs it was called, six port in transit depot supplies. Remember, we called it six PIDs, where I finished my service time until such time as I again went in the hospital complaining about a air bubble in my appendix scar, and that's all it was. And because I had seen on the bulletin board that any operation had to be performed, non-emergency operation, had to be performed in what they called ZI, Zone of Interior. Zone of Interior is the United States of America. So I figured I'll chance getting sent back. The doctor who examined me knew exactly what I was doing and said, let's get you back home, Sonny.
So when did you find out that Spiro had got killed and Nick had been wounded? When did you find that out?
I found it when I was in one of the replacement depots. I was playing ping pong, and I had held the table for quite a while, and all of a sudden some guy came up and saw my last name, looked at me and said, I thought you got caught, you got trapped. How did you? And I said, hey, wait, stick around. I'll never forget, I told him, stick around till I finish the game. But he didn't stick around. And I never found outside of the fact that he had mentioned that I, thinking I was Spiro, that I had been caught. And then I realized maybe. And I guess it was about a month later when I started getting all my mail back from Spiro. And then finally saying MIA, MIA, and then KIA, KIA. Which, you know, MIA is obviously missing in action. KIA is killed in action.
So then, after the depot, did you spend some time in Paris, correct?
Yes, quite a bit.
And what happened there? What did you do there? What were your activities, both military and other?
Sightseeing.
What else?
Sightseeing and enjoying myself with friends.
Which friends?
Well, I did have a female friend who I had met her through my buddy's girlfriend, Jacqueline. And it was Cindy. She introduced me to her niece, who was also named Jacqueline. And we would travel Paris together and see the sights and being introduced to the various sites in Paris.
Did you have any money-making opportunities with them?
Well, we had parachutes on our base, and the parachutes were rather valuable, especially to the French people. They were worth $750-some-odd a parachute, and parachutes were packed, three parachutes and a in a crate, and I was able to take a couple parachutes, a crate at a time, into Paris, or sell them locally, which brought me a little bit of extra money. A crate was worth worth $2,250.
So what'd you do with the money?
Spent it.
On food, drink, whatever.
Food.
Now, you didn't drink, correct?
No.
So?
I like to treat people, too, you know.
All right.
You know, people used to like to party with the kid who drank lemonade.
I see.
I would drink lemonade, and we would walk in a tavern or a cafe and...
What about cars? You mentioned one time you had access to commandeered German vehicles.
No, we not a commandeered German vehicle. We found a 1937 Renault.
What do you mean you found it?
Well, it was parked someplace and we found it. We repaired it and we're driving that around. My driving, but majority of my driving was done in a Jeep.
Okay.
You know, I was the Jeep driver for the commander of the post of the unit, and his lady friend was in Rouen. So once I dropped him off in Rouen for the weekend, I could go on, take the Jeep and go wherever I wanted to go.
Till Monday morning.
When I picked him up, brought him back to the base, and we had a lot of time. So Ferris was just a quick drive away, a couple hours.
That's it, a couple hours?
Yeah, about two and a half hours from Rouen, I think. Rouen to Paris, wasn't far. Maybe less, more, but... I never bothered with time because we had the time to do it.
All right. Well, tell me the story about when you and your cousin Spike Spear went to pick up Thea Kay and Sammy at Union Station in Chicago.
After the war, of course, we my cousin Catherine Spear got married to Gregory Durzis. They had a child, Sam, and Sam was about 9 months, maybe a year old, and she was coming in to visit They were living in Birmingham, Alabama, and she was coming in to visit us, the families, the Spear and Eugenius families. She was coming up on the IC train. So my cousin Spiro, who was a few years younger than myself, and I were going to meet them at the train station, pick them up. I had the car, and bring her home. At that time, I had was trying to grow a mustache. You have to understand this, too. I have very little hair, and I never shaved in service because I didn't have any hair on my face. So this being a couple of years later, I tried to develop a mustache, and so I couldn't develop it, so then I started using eyebrow pencil to give me a mustache, and I was all dooted up. We were going to go out. I had a sport jacket and pants and dressed fairly nice, and we were at the Union Station waiting for Catherine's train to come in with young Sammy. And unfortunately, my cousin Spiro had a lisp, so we would speak a lisp, which sort of gave a thought of effeminacy. And we went to the washroom to make use of the facilities. While we're in there, we were talking, and we happened to mention that, gee, we can't wait to see the little guy. And a couple, three GIs overheard us talking, and of course, they heard Spiro talking, Spikey, and thought, well, these boys are gay. And so they started getting smart with us and started making innuendos that they were going to have their sexual fun with us. Obviously, it wasn't the case, because they found out that Spikey was a pretty tough kid in his own right, and I was able to handle my own, and we sort of put them in the toilets, so to speak, and left, and met Kay and little Sammy. But that was just it was my fault, really, that all this started with this fake mustache, which I was trying, which to this day, of course, as everybody who knows me knows, I've never had a mustache because, A, I still can't grow one.
So it's after the war. So tell me about Spike going off to Korea. You had mentioned one time that you told him not to go.
Well, when he came off from his basic training, my little cousin, Spiro, Spike, we called him, he wanted to visit all the relatives. So we, knowing that he was going overseas, my dad said, why don't you take the car and drive Spiro around, Spike around, to all the relatives. And we started visiting all of his relatives. And he would say goodbye to them. And in the conversation of being with them for almost the entire day, when I say the entire day, from about 8, 9 o'clock in the morning till about 8, 9 o'clock at night, we were talking, and got to the point where he said, I'm not coming back. I said, what do you mean you're not coming back? He said, well, I don't think I'm going to come back. I said, then don't go. If you have that feeling that you're not going to come back, don't go. Why run into death if you're, because he said, no, he says, I have to go. He says, I have to go. He wanted to go. There again, you have to backtrack and realize that this was a boy who was much younger than the rest of us, his two older brothers, myself, and my brother Nicholas. He had another cousin, Jim Bitsakis, and the Anthony brothers. We all hung around together, and Spike was 3-4 years younger than all of us, so we would try to chase him away when he wanted to hang out with us, and he wouldn't go away. And he said, I'm never going to take a step back. And he never did. Even in high school, when he was into boxing, they had boxing contests in Amundsen High School where he attended. Out of the three fights he had, he just wore down the other two of the fighters to where they just dropped their arms, and then he beat them up. Because that's the way he was. He just never stepped back. And he was just a tough young man. Very tough. So that's the way it was.
So then he went off to Korea.
Then he went off to Korea. And fortunately, we met a couple guys afterwards who were with his service, with his outfit. And they said, Spike got the Silver Star. And what he had done, he decided I think it's Port Chop Hill, where the Chinese came out in thousands. And he said, I'll stay behind. And he said, no, he said, just give me the machine gun and leave me the ammunition. I'm staying. You guys retreat. I don't retreat. So he stayed behind and eventually got overwhelmed and killed. But he was awarded the Silver Star posthumously for that.
All right, so now we're up to about 1950. You're going to Birmingham to visit your cousins?
Yes.